just have to listen to me, Kent. If you can't listen to me, draw a picture of Tank, the cool dog. So, or Smooch, the cool dog. So we got plenty of stuff to look at. I don't know if it's because I'm getting older or if ministers around me are getting younger, but I find myself having more and more conversations with young ministers. And it's probably, after being with you, it's probably one of my favorite things to do, actually, to try to encourage the young men who are doing a job that needs to be done. One of them called me a few weeks ago, and he preaches a couple of states over, and he said, "I'm calling you from my bed, and I just can't get out of bed. I don't want to even go to work. I'm at a church that's struggling. They're grumpy at each other. Community doesn't seem to care about Jesus. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. And I don't know why I'm doing what I'm doing." You ever felt that way? The alarm clock goes off at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock or whatever time your alarm clock goes off, and you say, "What am I doing getting up every day doing this?" My guess is all of us have probably had moments like that. That if all of us have had moments where because of stress or because of difficulties at work or stuff going on at home, we have asked, "Does my life really have any purpose?" And I want to tell you over the next few weeks that your life has a purpose. Even if there are moments when you feel you're stuck in a mundane job, even in those moments when you're wrestling with family, even in those moments when everything seems to be going the wrong direction, I want you to hear that you've got a purpose. Okay, one of my fears, we've been studying Solomon, and we're going to keep studying Solomon. We're just going to take a little different angle. Is one of my fears is that Solomon figures out his purpose early, but then he loses sight of it. That he realizes early in his young age as king what matters the most, and he asks God for those things. But as he grows older, he grows less and less enchanted with being king and wonders, "Where can I find something that has purpose?" And my guess is some of us have tried the same thing. Ecclesiastes is a book that it's thought that either Solomon or maybe possibly one of Solomon's students writes. I kind of think it's Solomon writing it at the end of his life. And it's a book that is strange. In fact, it's a book, and I've taught it in classes a number of times, but I've never preached from it too much, but it's one of those books that I get asked, "Why is this even in the Bible? It seems like it's all negative, and it seems like it's a little cynical, and it's depressing, and when I read it, I just wrestle with it." And I want to tell you, I think it's in the Bible for a reason. And maybe my leaning toward it is that I think it is the redemption of the hero that I watched fall. Because remember last week I said I love the story of Solomon, how it begins, and I love the story of Solomon asking God for the right things and asking God for wisdom and then demonstrating that wisdom as he led Israel. But what broke my heart about Solomon is the way his story ends. And so I guess part of me wants to think that Ecclesiastes is more the end of Solomon's story than those last words we read from 1 Kings last week. Because Solomon finally seems to get something. He's going to say this in chapter 1, verse 2. He's going to say, "Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, everything is meaningless." That's Solomon's way of saying, all this stuff that I've got, all this stuff that I'm chasing, all the stuff that is at my feet and at my disposal, it just doesn't matter. It's like chasing after the wind. But then he would get to the end of his book and he would say this. He would say, "Meaningless, meaningless, everything is meaningless." And so I wonder if maybe Solomon has got some words to the 21st century church. That if Solomon, in looking at his life, and again, I see the book as this is something Solomon is doing in his old age as he is reflecting back, and I wonder, is Solomon a pessimist? Is he a realist? Is he just doing an inventory of all that he's had and figured out that a lot of it didn't matter? We'll talk about his final statement in the book in a couple of weeks. But there are at least a couple of things that Solomon says about life that nobody wants to hear. The first thing he's going to say in chapter 1 is that life can be monotonous. Okay, this is going to sound bad when I say this. I love monotony. Not monopoly. I'm not any good at that one because I can't keep track of my money. But I like things to go exactly the way they should go every single day. For instance, I want to walk in the office tomorrow. I want to say hello to Lindsay. I want to make my cup of coffee, and I don't want to see her for the next 8 hours. No offense, Lindsay. Because my guess is that's our quietest day in the office, and if she comes and back and interrupts me, it means we got something going wrong, and suddenly my day is going to be uphill. I want to sit and put my feet in a chair, and I want to have my Bible in my lap until exactly 10:45. And at 10:45, I want to make some more coffee, and I want to start working on next Sunday's sermon. And then I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I want to go get lunch with the old guys who give me a hard time, and I want to come back from that to some peace and quiet. And I love monotony, but I don't love it when it's my life. And you probably don't either. So Solomon writes this. What do people gain from all of their labors at which they toil under the sun? Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and then turns to the north. Round and round it goes. If he would have lived here, he would have said it blows dirt, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they go again. All things are wearisome, more than one can say. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. What has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again, for there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there is something new? It was here already, long ago. It was here long before our time. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. Okay, that's depressing, isn't it? So let's preach a sermon about it, shall we? I think Solomon is saying life's boring sometimes. Life can be monotonous. Life can feel like it's stuck in a rut. And the question he appears to be asking from this text is, what have we done that has changed the world? Okay, I got to thinking, okay, what have we done that has changed the world? Okay, so here's what I've seen in my 54 years of life. I remember a rancher in Clayton having a bag phone. And I took mine out of my pocket. That little phone that you have in your pocket that most of you are reading your Bible off is better than the computer NASA used to go to the moon. Okay, so we've done some good things. Let's see, we've invented cell phones. We've invented space travel. We've got hybrid automobiles. We've got all kinds of things going on in the world. But has the world changed? Are we feeding the poor better? Probably not. Are we saving more marriages? Probably not. Are we living in some great Christian utopia where everything is fabulous and fantastic? Probably not. And so we would agree with Solomon when Solomon writes this in verse 15. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. That the world we live in while maybe there's significance in some things, if we just really looked at it, we would say, is it any better? Is it any better than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 50 years ago? Or some of you are old enough to say, is it any better 75 or 80 years ago? Because life can sometimes be monotonous. One of the questions I think Solomon is asking from this text is history going to attach anything to our existence? That as we live here on this earth, is history going to say anything about us 30 years from now? Okay, the second thing that seems to annoy Solomon is life can be merciless. Solomon is going to say throughout his book, bad guys finish first. And I know you're annoyed at that. I know you're annoyed at those moments when you've tried to do everything right in your job and you've got the guy who will step on everybody to get up the ladder and you're one of the ones he stepped on to get up the ladder. And I know you're going to say, well, why do bad things happen to Christians? And here are these people who are doing nothing right in their life when it comes to God. And it's like God has given them the rainbow plus. And that annoys Solomon, just like it kind of annoyed you. Solomon would write this in chapter 5. He would say, if you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from their fields. Or chapter 7, verse 15, Solomon would write this, in this meaningless life of mine, I've seen both of these things, the righteous perishing in their righteousness and the wicked living long in their wickedness. Or chapter 8, There is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. The righteous who get what the wicked deserve and the wicked who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. So I commend the enjoyment of life because there is nothing better for a person under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. And then joy will accompany them in their toil all the days of their life that God has given them under the sun. So it's interesting in the verses before 15 where he's going to say, here's what we ought to do. We ought to eat, drink, and be merry. Some of your translations might say. He would say, here's the truth about the world we live in. It's a mess. And the truth about the world we live in is bad guys get what the good guys should get. And that's sad and that's depressing. Things upset Solomon like work and fortune. He says in chapter 2 these words, for a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This, too, is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? Okay, when I was thinking of this point, Jonah and I were talking back and forth about the wedding, and I got to think that someday Jonah is going to inherit all of my stuff. I mean, we only have one kid, and so the one kid's going to get it all. And I thought, what is my one kid going to get? He's going to throw it all away. I mean, he's going to walk into my church office and he's going to say, these are a bunch of books that nobody has read in 100 years. I'm giving them away. And he's going to walk into my little room where I have fountain pens that I've just worked so meticulously over to make them all perfect and right, just right. And they're my favorite possession. And he's going to say, how quick can I get these on eBay? He's not going to care about my stuff. Solomon is looking at his life and he's saying, we've done all of this work to accumulate all of this stuff, and here's what's going to happen to it. It's going to go to someone who doesn't even care. He's concerned about death. He's going to get to chapter 5 and he'll write these words. He'll say, this too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain for their toil in the wind? For all of their days they eat in darkness, great frustration, affliction, and anger. Okay, I think what Solomon is saying is, does this really matter? The getting up every morning and going to work, the saving our money to purchase a home or to buy a car, the work we put forth so that we can maybe make it a better life for our children, does anything really matter? And Solomon's conclusion at least appears to say it's meaningless. Okay, let's talk about that phrase for a second. When Solomon says meaningless, he means worth nothing. It's like chasing after the wind. Have you ever tried to chase after the wind? I mean, we've had a lot of wind lately, haven't we? We've had a lot of dirt. You ever tried to catch some of that dirt? It seems the only place I can catch the dirt and the wind is in my teeth, and everything else is going to Texas, and you can try to reach out and grab it, but you just can't do it. And so Solomon is saying just that life is meaningless. But then he says in chapter 3 this, he has made everything beautiful in its time, and he has set eternity in the human heart. Yet no one can fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Okay, what I want to tell you this morning is we spent the first 10 minutes looking at all the stuff Solomon says is meaningless. And we'll see some more stuff in a second. But I want you to see that there is a reason to look forward. There is a reason to get up in the morning. There is a reason to start that prayer in the morning that says, God, help me through this day to be who you want me to be and to accomplish the things you want me to accomplish and to put things in the right priority. Because Solomon didn't. See, most people cope kind of like Solomon did with a meaningless existence by looking for a better deal. Okay, I've got a friend who always wants a better job. And every couple of years it's like, okay, I need something new. And he doesn't need something new because he's bored. He needs something new because he wants a little more money, or he wants a little more prestige, or he wants a little more of whatever comes with that. And so he jumps and he jumps and he jumps. And what he's found is he's never happy in any of them. But he keeps thinking if he gets the next one, he'll be just a little better off. He's looking for a better deal. Don't we do the same thing? Aren't we pretty guilty of looking for the better deal? Just look at a few things. Look at credit card debt. You're looking for a better deal. Hey, I've got a great TV right here in the room. They've got one on sale at Sam's that is 2 inches bigger and 3 years newer. I think I'm going to get that one. And I'll hang this one in the garage. Or I've got a perfectly good car, and it runs great, and it's low miles, and it's paid off. I think what I'll do is I'll buy another car for $50,000 or $60,000 nowadays. We added another kid to our house, and now we've only got two spare bedrooms. Maybe I ought to get a little bigger. And we're just looking for the better deal. Look at it in our marriages. I have lost count of my peers of men who, when they turn 50 or so, they have looked at the wife they've been married to for 25 or 30 years and said, hey, I wouldn't mind trying something else. And I cannot count the number of people who fit that bill. Look at the way we do so many other things. See, Solomon tries the same thing. Solomon would say in chapter 1, beginning in verse 16, and we're not going to read it, so you can go back and read it on your own. He's going to say for about the end of that chapter and the first half of chapter 2, let me tell you the roads I tried. I tried being the intellectual. I tried going to college. I mean, he didn't go to college, but I tried learning more and more, and I became the smartest guy on the planet, and everything that I knew was meaningless. And I tried hedonism. I tried, and just, I wish we didn't have our kids in the room. I had 1,000 women at my disposal, and I tried living life to my pleasure, and it turns out it was meaningless. And I tried having everything, and I was the wealthiest man on the planet, and if there was anything I could have it in a heartbeat. And what he's going to say at the end of all of that, at the end of his search, is I've tried the intellect, and I've tried hedonism, and I've tried materialism, and here's what happened. It was all not enough still. And my fear is that we are the same way, because what do we do when everything we always wanted isn't enough? Just think about that. What do you do when everything you always wanted is still not enough? In that little section beginning in verse 16 of chapter 1, all the way to really the end of chapter 2, Solomon never once speaks about God. Thus the problem. That he's tried to find it in his knowledge and how smart he is, and he's tried to find it in giving every pleasure he's got satisfaction, and he's tried to find it in owning everything he can own, and he's not tried to find it in the only place that really matters. And so he'll go on and on and on about, I tried it, and I tried it, and I tried it, and I tried it, and it was all meaningless. And his point is that unless you get God in the midst of that, it's all going to be worthless in the end. Because real hope isn't found under the sun. Real hope is found above it. 32 times in Ecclesiastes, Solomon is going to use the phrase, under the sun. And my favorite line from researching this is this: if we live life only from a horizontal perspective, we will become nothing else than an accomplished sinner. If I live my life just on this plane, and this plane is how am I going to be happy, and what am I going to do to meet my needs, and what kind of car can I drive, and what house can I do, and what watch can I wear, and how much jewelry can I put on, and how many ways can I satisfy every pleasure I've got, and we start filling in every blank or trying to it on this plane, we're going to be nothing but an accomplished sinner. And we're going to die with a whole van full of stuff that means nothing. I used to think that the world could make me happy. This was a long time ago. I used to think if Nikki would just get a better job, because preachers don't make a boatload of money, if Nikki could just get a better job, I'd be happier. Nikki got a better job. You know what? I'm not any happier today than I was when we didn't have anything. And if I could get a little better car, I might be a little happier. And if I could get a house where I had my own office and my own little den to call my place, I'd be a little happier. And if I could. And the truth is all of those if I could meant nothing. If I'm only going to live life here. See, our life will only have meaning, and this may be hard for some of us to hear, but our life will only have meaning when we realize we were created so much more, for so much more than just accumulating junk that our kids are going to have to get rid of. I get asked every now and then a simple question. I don't know what to do. I can't seem to find something here that makes me happy. All I can do is nod my head and say, yep. Solomon is saying, this is meaningless. Now, he's going to say, enjoy it, and he's going to say, realize it came from God eventually, and he's going to say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you might die, and I think there's some points in that we celebrate what God has done, but I think we need to see it for what it's worth. I think I've probably told this story before. One of my friends trades in cars, so that means he gets a different car, about every, I don't know, month or two. And what he does every single time is he goes and he takes a flat ball peen hammer and he puts a dent in the rear quarter panel. He's just gotten a car that, and they're pretty pricey cars. They're, you know, it's not a 20-year-old Honda Accord. And if you drive a 20-year-old Honda Accord, be grateful. That's a great car. But, I mean, he'll put a ding in a Cadillac or he'll put a ding in some fancy car. And his point is I need to convince myself and remind myself that that car is just a thing and it doesn't matter. Okay, I have not told a Jonah story in a long time, so I'm going to tell one. Jonah's really only ticked me off a couple of times. One of the times was when he said, well, he did something. I won't tell you what he did. And I said, why on earth did you do that? And he gave this response, what's the big deal? You know where I am, right? If your kid says, what's the big deal about that? You want to take the big deal and shove it down their throat, literally, figuratively, all kinds of ways. Okay, here's the problem. The big deal isn't on this pot. The big deal isn't this place. The big deal is not your job. It's not your bank account. It's not the stuff you got. The big deal isn't your reputation. The big deal isn't the business you own. The big deal has nothing to do with any of this. And until I figure out that the big deal is about God, my life is always going to be in circles, trying to find the next thing, trying to find something that'll make me a little happier, trying to find something that'll bring me joy even for a moment, trying to find this in relationships, in stuff, in whatever. And until we figure out the big deal is Him, we're constantly going to cycle in that. Solomon. Again, this is why I want to think Solomon figured it out on his deathbed, maybe. He says this at the very end of his book. Now, all that has been heard, All this stuff I've told you. You can go read it on your own. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Okay, I think what Solomon is saying, Israel, church, here's the big deal. And I want to figure out the big deal. A few days ago, one of our old fishermen was telling a story about them on Brantley Lake. And it made me laugh, so I'm going to tell it to you. I won't tell you the old fishermen, but they're on Brantley Lake, and their little engine, this shows how much I know about boating, it's stuck. And their boat is doing this. If you feel like that, you haven't found the big deal. If you feel like your life is just going in a circle and it's just stuck in a rut, then I want you to look somewhere else. Not for a better boat, not for a better job, not for a better spouse, not for a better fill in whatever blank. I want you to look up. Because everything under the sun is still going to put you in that same pattern. So we got to look beyond that. So there's my call to you. We're going to talk a little bit more about some other stuff Solomon is bothered by next week. But I just want you to see that the world isn't going to make you happy. Maybe for a little bit, but not for the long run. So find the real deal. So if you need me and you want to talk about it in your life, I'm down at the front. I'll be at the back when we're leaving. If you need elders to talk to you about their journey, because they've all been through the same stuff you've been through, they'll be at every door as you're going out. But if you need us, just come and find us. And let's figure out how to make life full of meaning and not meaningless. Kent, let's sing.